Sorry about that. I wanted to share a few words about happiness and suffering. And in our tradition, we talk about the art of suffering, and that if we don't know how to suffer, we won't know how to be happy. That there is no way to happiness without knowing how to suffer. Oh, thank you. Is this any better? Not really. Right. Let's see. Is this any better? No. Yeah. How is this? Is that better? Maybe I just need to speak up, don't I? Instead of relying on the tech to do that for me. How about that? It's fun. So this understanding of what we call no mud, no lotus. The lotus cannot grow without the mud. And the mud is nasty and sticky and has all kinds of little vermins in it. And yet, out of that mud comes this amazing, beautiful lotus. And so, what's up with that, right? And how is that? How is it that we can really bring that simile, that analogy, into our just daily life of suffering? Like, how do we do that? So in the Buddhist scriptures or the texts, there we talk about three kinds of suffering, which you all may be aware of again already, but I'll just mention them again. One is the suffering, what we call dukkha, just the suffering, the pain, the suffering of pain, or the pain of suffering, which is the one that many of us experience and sort of live into in our daily lives, the pain of our body, the pain of growing older, the pain of death, not just our upcoming death, because remember, our death process starts when we, our birth, at birth time, that's when we start dying, isn't it? It's really a continuation. So that's a suffering. Death of our loved ones, people we love and people we care about, this is a suffering. Being with people who we don't want to be with, and not being with the people we want to be with, this is a suffering. Losing the things that we care about, this is a suffering. And so there's these daily constant suffering that we actually identify, are not just illness in the physical sense, but our mental illness as well. So there's a suffering here, and that suffering, a lot of it has to do with not just what we call that initial suffering, right? The pain in the body, that's a real suffering. What we call the first arrow of suffering. And then there's the second arrow of suffering, which is how do we engage with the pain? Is it, oh, poor me, why me? Why does this always happen to me? this attitude that we engage. And so what we say in Buddhism is that much of our suffering in this first category of just the daily activity of life, it's really elaborated by the attitude we bring to it. And I think, I mean, we all know this inherently, right? It comes in many different forms. You know, is my glass half full or half empty? Right? The way we like to describe some people, we meet them and they're like, wow, that's a negative person. And so when that person has some kind of particular suffering, like a pain, they're going to bring that attitude to it. Right? And that attitude, in addition to the real injury of a pain body, it elaborates it. Right? That's what I call the second arrow. It's the first arrow. It's like you get an arrow and there's a wound. And the second arrow is the attitude we bring to it that open makes that wound larger. So it's not an actual, so it's the second arrow is the attitude, what we bring to it. The first arrow is the actual penetration of the skin that causes the tear and the actual harm that brings pain, real physical pain. And so this is the same thing with everything in life, this being with people we don't want to be with, right? You know, this happens all the time. It's in our family, it's in our workplace, it's in wherever we are, we're navigating that. Not being with the people we want to be with. We're always navigating that as well. What is the attitude we bring into that? It's not denying it's there. It's what is the mental attitude we bring into that? And how is that either making the suffering worse, elaborating it, or how is it really saying, just acknowledging it? Yeah, you know, I really don't want to be here. Right? And what else is here with me? And this is the art of suffering, is how do we take care of that second arrow? Are we adding to it in the way that the attitude we're bringing, or are we acknowledging it? So this is not about repressing and, you no, this is not about that. Let's pretend we're not suffering or we don't have pain. No, this is real. There's real stuff going on. Someone says something mean to us, that's real, right? We live in a very oppressive society, depending on who we are. It's racist, it's homophobic, it's classist, it's ableist, it's xenophobic, it's misogynistic, it's a colonial white supremacist system, imperialism, patriarchy, right? This is real. We don't make it up. At least I don't think I make it up when someone is treating me differently because of my skin color or my gender, perceived gender identity. But how do I deal with it? Like what's going on in my mind as I'm taking that first arrow in? Is there an acknowledgement and a way of taking care of that internally first? And then if there's something I need to do to correct it, if that's the time to do it, I do it, I take care of it. Or do I sit there and bring into my mind stream every single time someone has treated me that way because of who I am in this form? Now, if I did that every single time, be a lot of suffering, a lot more suffering, right? Because I'd be reliving that all the time. And that's what re-traumatizing is, right? Is we haven't healed enough that it just touches it and it brings it all forward. And much of what happens in response to that immediate arrow comes from that second arrow is coming forward from something that may have happened even just before or from childhood. Or maybe it's something we don't even know from a previous life. Maybe it's a generational, an ancestor wound that we carried forward. And so this ability, this art of knowing how to take care of that suffering is really what helps us define what else is there. So for me, when someone's acting like that, and it's not always like this, because it all depends on in that moment, what are my glass, how full my glass is. Like if it's been a full day where people have been acting kind of strange, that, you know, fifth time might be, my glass might be almost full. So the way I take care of that may be very different than that first arrow in the morning where nothing, you know, at least for that first day, there wasn't any arrows coming. And so that ability to stay fresh, that ability to, throughout the day, as those things may impinge, and it's different things, right? It's not just this one way, this one racist incident or misogynistic incident. It could be, you know, you're just driving down the street, someone cuts you off. It's another thing in your cup. You know, something was, you expected something from the post person and they didn't bring it, right? It's like all these little things, right? I mean, this is our, you know, we don't have to get big and elaborate. We just take up the daily things that happen in life and how we take care of it. And so when all these things add up, what is it that's there? Because it's all a stress, right? It's all a stress over and over again. And so how are we taking care of it? This is our practice. This is the mindfulness practice. Right? And so this art of taking care of it is what allows us to not get pulled into it, not bring a second arrow. And, you know, it's not just two arrows. Sometimes it's three and four and five arrows. It's big. One incident can elaborate an entire traumatic event, especially depending on where we are in taking care of things in any one day. You know, there's a big thing that happened at work. Whatever it is, someone got laid off, or there's been a death in someone we love, it brings it all up. And so any one thing can really become something very big. And so how we are able with practice to take care of that really determines what else we can notice is there at any moment. What else is there? Because there's always something else there, right? And so this first type of suffering, just like just everyday suffering that we go through, and how we take care of it, it already begins to help us figure out, oh, there is an art to this. This meeting the suffering. How do we meet it? And it has to do with the practice, right? It has to do with this mindfulness, like noticing this is happening. Do I have time to investigate it? Well, maybe not right now. I'm noting it though. The next thing, I'm noticing this again. Maybe I have more time to investigate it. Because in the process of that investigation, we're also noticing what else is there. And in that process of noticing what else is there, this is when we start also noticing that it's not just that suffering that's going on. You know, it's like when someone starts out in a good day and they're like all cheery and it's the sun is out and they're like stepping brightly. And then somebody gives them a dirty look while they're walking, and immediately their whole mood changes. Now the sun didn't stop shining, okay, when that person gave them that dirty look. And all the other things that were making them happy, none of that stopped. But this one thing happened, and all of a sudden that person's whole mood shifted. And this is where we want to truly start to be mindful, because if we can't remember all those factors and conditions that were there to make us happy, and we drop all those things and just cling to this one thing, this is why we stay in suffering. And so the art of suffering is that, is to acknowledge it, meet it, right? I see you, I got you, I take care of you right now. Or right now I can't take care of you, but I know you're here. I'm gonna take care of you later. And I keep remembering all these other things that had me so jubilant just 5 seconds ago. So this ability to stay mindful is because it's not just mindfulness of the suffering, it's mindfulness of all the other causes and conditions that are there that we had and we were living into bright and cheery. And it's just like that. I mean, this is it. This is it. It's meeting what's in front of us, meeting what is there, taking good care of it, And taking good care of it may be looking more deeply, investigating it, transforming it right there. Sometimes just an acknowledging of it transforms it, right? Because sometimes just the acknowledgement, like you look at the person that, you know, whatever did this act, you see in them already, you know, you're like, wow, they're having a hard day. Oh, I wonder what happened to them that they're acting this way. And just like that looking into it drops it. Because now we've created this spaciousness and this compassion that can hold that. And it's gone. So just that mere awareness, that little tip of investigation allowed us to have some compassion, understanding, and let it go. And sometimes it's something deeper. Sometimes it's more. It's not just that. Sometimes we can't do that because there's not enough spaciousness. And maybe at those times we just have to note it. This is happening. I need to take care of this. It's touching something. I don't know why it made me like really go off, but I really need to look into it some more. And still, that acknowledgement allows us to say, yes, this is happening. This hurts. This is a problem. I need to take care of it. But that still didn't erode all those other things that were there. Those things are still there. And so this is it, right? This is the craft of how do we do this? And so it sounds real easy, right? It's like, oh yeah, just do this. But it's not. We all know it's not. And this is why we do this whole mindfulness, is we keep practicing to notice, to notice. And so that's why we do these meditations of noticing the breath. Can I begin to notice it here? And then do I notice it here? And then can I notice full body? Do I notice the sensation? And as we become to notice in these very subtle ways, we create this spaciousness so that when we're moving in the world actively, we have that spaciousness to see the subtlety of what else is there. And that's why we sit, and that's why we follow our footsteps, and that's why we stay present to when we're drinking or eating or opening the door or taking our shoes off, is staying present to what's there so we can take good care of it and we don't let it blow up and pull something from the past that has nothing to do with what just happened. And we see it. And we say, oh, I'm not going to let that's not about this right now. But I see this stuff still here. I need to take care of this. I need to take some time and sit with this and heal this. So it brings us, keeps bringing us back to what needs to be cared for so we don't let it take over the happiness that is right there, right? So then another suffering is the suffering of change. In Buddhism, what we call this, one of the characteristics of this world is everything changes. And we crave for consistency. We want things to just stay the way they are, especially when they're things that make us happy. Right? We partner and we want that initial glow around that relationship to just be there, and inevitably something happens and it doesn't stay that way, and then we suffer because we wanted it to stay the same way. We crave for constancy. And yet we know that this world is of a nature to change. It just changes. Everything changes. And so our clinging and our craving and our desire to keep things constant really brings us a lot of suffering. And so this is one of the things to practice with as well, right? To recognize in any moment that this too will change. And it's a very deep teaching and understanding because if we understand it, we can also understand it for the suffering that we're going through. This too will change. It's not going to stay this way. This difficulty that we're going through in the world, these wars, the war in our streets in Baltimore, if you know, if you're here, it's, you know, we're having this, so many killings, so much violence. And yet, we have to say this too will change, even though it feels like it's not and it's getting worse. But this remembering that this too will change. And so this ability to keep recognizing that this is a characteristic of our human being, this nature, the phenomenal world we live in, everything changes. And this is something that we can always look to and hold on to with our suffering. And it's something that we must remember with our happiness when we're experiencing something that's joyful or something that brings us pleasure, is this too will change. The third one is that lingering fear that exists under our joy and our happiness. This nature of, am I going to lose something? This, even in the middle of the joy, there's this deep-seated worry, this fear that this will pass. And that's a fear of, that's a an anxiety, a background of anxiety that we live with, this deep down fear that just even existing is questionable. Even our purpose in this world is questionable. This, what we call, what Thich Nhat Hanh calls this original fear of being born and feeling dependent and needing people to make us okay, needing people to make us happy. This deep, deep fear that was a real fear as an infant, right? Baby's born, slapped on the bottom, needing everything, milk, needing to be changed, everything. And how we have taken that original fear and lived into our adulthoods with it, and how it really is at the bottom of so much of how we exist. This wanting to please others, this caring so much about what people think about us, this lingering fear that we're going to lose everything because people are going to find out about really who we are. And really, who are we? Oh, we're non-deserving. This very deep-seated internalized sense of why do I exist? You know, that kind of, what is my purpose in life? That one that always gets us, sometimes we go off and try to figure that out. So this is always with us. It's either showing itself big or it's really underlying, even in the moments of pleasure. It's a suffering. So this morning I was looking at the one of these trees that are starting, you know, how they have this beautiful little light green color. And I was looking at it and I was thinking, you don't question your existence, do you? You just, you know, turn brown in the winter and then you turn green in the summer. And you bring so much pleasure to us. And the flowers, these little daffodils, you know, with their little head, I feel like they're lower this year because this winter is like slapping them down and then they don't know what to do. And yet they bring us so much pleasure. And I thought, you know, you don't even like sit there and wonder, like, why do I exist? What's my role in this world? What is my purpose? Do I belong here? Should they give me the best kind of compost or not? You know, they don't do that. And yet us humans with this like greater consciousness and this mind that's there to offer us transformation, we live in this fear. We're using our minds in a certain way that brings us this suffering. And so there's this way that we really want to take care. That's the other way, right? The craft and the art of taking care of the underlying, that kind of background place that we live. Even when everything, you know how it is, when everything is going, there's that inkling in us, like, when's it, you know, something's going to happen. That comes from this kind of, do I deserve this, you know? And for those of us who come from these marginalized populations who've been telling us that we really don't deserve anything, we have it sometimes even deeper. we've internalized what the societal norm is that we don't, we're not deserving. We're sub, you know, it comes back from the idea of being subhuman, right? So the way that we just keep this, am I purposed? Do I exist? You know, why do I exist? Do I deserve this? The good things that come when good things happen, do I deserve this? This questioning always. This is one of the things that really is there. It doesn't allow us to rest in our body. It doesn't allow our mind to relax fully. It keeps us jumping to grasp at things. It keeps our desire up to and the consumption then goes. You know, why do we, as soon as we get quiet and sit, why do we jump up and do something? Or we grab the phone, or we, whatever the thing is that we all got our thing, right? We all got our thing. Go to the refrigerator, I don't know, go to the cupboard, you know, all of a sudden we need to pee, whatever it is, right? Let me brush my teeth, you know, like these things that disallow us from resting. Like, what is it under there, you know, that doesn't allow us to really rest, really in peace and grasping? And so this ability to really artfully remember and to take care of all this, like from the background, the base ground, at all the layers, the inevitability of change to the just daily occurrence of stress and impingement. You know, sometimes I go for a walk, I'm like, I have a chill weekend, and then I go out and go out for a walk, I'm chilling, and then like I meet humans and I say, wow, I want to go back inside. That just that daily occurrence of life, right? So there's that, there's just the daily way. And how do we greet it, right? How do we greet it? What's our art? And so maybe, you know, when I feel like that, maybe I needed even another day or two of rest, probably another month of rest, so that when I met that, I could take it and I have more spaciousness for it. So my mind doesn't think, ah, there we go again, right? It's just like that. It's just as direct as that. It's not flamboyant. It's not like superfluous. It's just that. It's what am I doing to take good care of myself? And where's my mindfulness so I can notice when I need to do that more? Because I'm noticing what's coming up in my mind. And when I notice, what do I do? So when I notice that, I'm like, okay, we need some more rest because I'm still too full. So anything that comes, like, keeps filling me up more. I don't have spaciousness enough, right? And that's the art. And the art of our happiness is, how are we going to deal with the everyday impingements that come? What is our craft? How do we take care of that? How do we practice? Because I know when I practice more, when I say practice, I don't necessarily mean sitting in meditation. I mean my steps. When I'm washing the dishes, am I really washing the dishes, or I'm like thinking about the thing, the meeting I had, or the thing I did yesterday? Oh, I should have said that instead. Oh, there was like so much more to comment on, right? I mean, we all do this. And so when I practice more, when I'm more present with everything I'm doing, there's more spaciousness because I'm fully present. The mind is like on one thing. It's not like jumping everywhere, past, future. Next time I'm going to say that. Next time I'm going to do this. So when that happens, when those kinds of continuous mindfulness practice happens, then there's more space. And I also have to mention the devices before I stop, because, you know, the devices, they're Dharma doors, we like to say. Because there's so many ways to practice. There's all these apps for meditation. There's Dharma talks and from all over the world that we can listen to. It's wonderful. There's never been so much access to the Dharma. I keep hearing this everywhere. There has never been more access to the Dharma. true death. And my invitation for you is, like, how often do we grab at that device as that distraction, that consumption? Because I know every time we grab for the device, we're not listening to a Dharma talk, and we're not trying to do a meditation app or listening for affirmations or tapping, whatever it is your thing is for bringing some calm to your body and your mind. And so we really have to, what did I hear someone say the other day? We have to really learn how to use technology and not let technology keep using us. Because right now technology is using us. And so how do we really use technology in a way that really brightens our life and not keep taking from it? Because right now it's taking from it. So this is one way I think we have to practice this art of technology, so that it's really a tool of our liberation and not contributing to all the unclarity and just filling us up in such a consumption way. So I will stop there and we'll have Dharma sharing. I wanted to talk about all our practices again. But I know you all know that walking, eating, drinking, using the toilet, everything can be done mindfully. Because this is our practice.